You see somebody like Robin Williams waving his hand. Bam, I've got it. I was there at the World Trade Center on 9/11. At that point, he ran out of the bar and got his smart taxi. And quite possibly, he just killed someone.
This is Brain Food.
Hello there, I'm Daryl Morris and welcome to the inaugural Brain Food. Science, tech, politics and people, we have food for the curious mind. In over 30 years of driving a New York taxi, Eugene Solomon has seen it all. Mafias, hookers, the rich and the famous, down and outs, young lovers, old lovers, passengers from every corner of the globe, fare dodgers, a variety of animals, tourists, lifetime New Yorkers, people in a rush and others with no particular place to go. One of the most iconic cities in the world, transformed.
I am Eugene Solomon, New York City taxi driver for 37 years.
Before we get into this, I want it to be known that I spent an hour and a half on the phone with Eugene Solomon from New York. It was funny, touching, completely and utterly gripping. This guy had me eating out of the palm of his hand. Editing this was a nightmare. Every single that I had to chop was soul destroying.
It's usually something like you didn't know what you're doing with your life. Hey, you want to drive a cab?
One of the questions Eugene gets asked the most, naturally, is had any famous people in your cab lately?
I was wondering how many celebrities I'd had in my taxi, and I just started making a list of everybody I could remember, and it came to about 120. I had Leonardo DiCaprio when he was a kid. It was about 1997, I believe. He was, I think, 17 years old at the time. I'm sitting in front of a popular nightclub called the Bowery Bar. I'm the next taxi in the line, and a bunch of kids, but you know, heading from my cab, kind of rowdy and loud. So they jump in, and there's one big guy sitting next to me in the front seat, and four in the back, three guys and one beautiful girl. And I don't know who they are. And a voice from the back seat comes out. One of them, well, by the way, one of them is smoking a cigar. So it's not driving. And a voice from the back seat says, hey, you know, this is Leonardo DiCaprio. You got back here? And it was actually his friend who wanted me to know who this important person was. I had never heard of him. I said, Leonardo to who? And then he jumps in. He turns out to be the guy smoking the cigar. And he says, hey, man, don't you know who I am? And he wanted me to know who he was. Tells me, I'm a movie star. And he named a couple of movies I had never seen, but I'd heard of. He said, I played with De Niro, man. And I liked the kid. It was a short ride. We got to the next club, and everybody jumps out except him. He sits there and starts asking me questions about what it's like to be a taxi driver. And, you know, he went from being the epitome of being interesting to being interested. As for, you know, a 17-year-old kid on a rocket ride to fame and fortune, for him to be interested in what it's like to be a taxi driver, I thought was very impressive. He says, who was the best celebrity tipper you've ever had? And I said, well, believe it or not, it was John McEnroe, the tennis player, who gave me double the meter. And he says, well, I'm going to give you triple the meter. And he did. So I wrote his name down. I wanted to remember who this guy was. I wrote his name down on my trip sheet. So the next day, my daughter, Susie, who was about, 12 years old at the time, I'd never been able to impress her with any of the celebrities I'd had in my cab. You know, I'd say, you know, not impressed, whoever it was. So I read the name of this guy, and the scream that emitted from the mouth of my daughter could have broken the wine glasses of the cabinet. She really knew who he was. And I have never been forgiven for having failed to get his autograph. In fact, I credit myself with his success because I've been giving the good word about this fellow to passengers in my cab ever since. And after that, it was Titanic and the next movie.
Very few mere mortals get the chance to have a proper one-on-one conversation with somebody they admire.
You have that special memory of him, like Robin Williams, for example. I had him a few years ago. It was a long ride, about a 20-minute ride. And, you know, it's that special feeling you have if you're a taxi driver, you see somebody like Robin Williams waving his hand in the street, looking at you, and you know that that moment, bam, I've got him. He's, like, he's mine. The thing with celebrities, you know, there's a sort of a physics of mass communications, which is a certain oddity in our culture, in that we receive a massive amount of communication on the inflow, and it naturally produces a desire to want to communicate to that person. And that's the physics of celebrity, you know. And as a taxi driver, you are in a unique position where communication with a celebrity is not something where you're necessarily imposing yourself. And so you have this moment where you see him, now he's yours. He was very communicative, very conversational, not unexpectedly, you know, a guy who, we haven't seen him on a talk show, he's outflowing, you know, he's on stage, obsessively perhaps. And I even wondered if I'd be able to talk with him, or, you know, how is he going to be? Is he a manic type of personality in person? But, you know, he wasn't. He was entertaining. He actually did a couple of impromptu impersonations for me. One of them was Francis McDormand from Fargo fame, also in Raising Arizona. I imagine for some mimic like Robin Williams, you don't want to do the usual, look at me, I could do President Obama. You know, so many people will do certain celebrities, and it's not a special thing to do if you're him. Kind of person, you wouldn't call him Mr. Williams, you'd call him Robin. He even was gracious enough to pose for a photograph of me in the backseat. I really liked him, and so sad to learn how he died, or that he died at all.
Eugene makes an interesting point. The relationship with a taxi driver is an odd one. Just you and them caught in a moment.
You see, that's the kind of thing you can get as a taxi driver. Not only is it a closed space, just the two of you, for a limited amount of time, but probably you're never going to see that person again. I picked up a lady probably about 50-something years old, visiting with her sisters. They all came. They met in New York and were doing the weekend together. And taking her back to her hotel, we had a conversation. And she tells me that her husband had died last year. And she told me about waking up in the middle of the night, and he was dead beside her. You know, it was one of those moments where you don't really know what to say. She needed to talk about it. And I was sort of a therapist to her. But I thought later, you know, my God, you know, what a thing. You know, to imagine that you wake up and your husband is dead. Sometimes I had a woman, Jesus, many years ago during the AIDS crisis, I had this young lady who broke down and started to cry. And she told me that she had AIDS. And she said she feared that no one would ever kiss her again. Not only that, but she was, it could be fatal. That people were dying. What an epidemic that was in New York City. And she told me that, and it was so heartrending. You know, she needed to tell that to someone.
Part taxi driver, part therapist. New York has every type of person that you can imagine. In abundance. People who are into orchards. There's loads of them. There's a club. There's five clubs. The class divide is as big as any developed city. Rich, poor, middle class. Eugene has a unique perspective over this, and it comes back to that thing again. Just them and him, caught in a moment, sat in a taxi. Very little to distinguish between them beyond dress, accent, maybe a smell.
I lived for a time in my youth in Africa and Mexico. Here you might define poverty as somebody who doesn't have an HDTV. My definition of poverty is somebody who's lived his entire life without a pair of shoes. There are two streets in New York, where if you're there, you're definitely in the 1%. Park Avenue and Fifth Avenue between 60th Street and 96th Street. It's that specific. You know, the real things about life, they affect everybody. You know, the conditions of being a human being. I had a ride. It was Mother's Day. And Mother's Day is a big day for people to take their mother out to dinner. I stopped at a posh restaurant on the Upper East Side, and a woman was put in the back. There was a woman who was taking care of an older woman and a man, and they were going to an address on Fifth Avenue where you had to be very wealthy to live there. And I'm thinking, thought in the back of my mind, you know, let's see if it's a cheap tip. And they had some trouble getting the woman into the taxi. She was very frail and old. And I could see after a moment that she was incoherent, senile. We drove a short ride down to the Fifth Avenue place. And then the process of getting the woman out of the taxi began. The doorman of the building shows up, and he's helping. And the gentleman who had been sitting next to me in the front seat and I are watching this procedure. And then he said something to me, which I thought was memorable. He said, "Don't get old." It meant to me that, you know, you can have all the money in the world, but you're still a human being and you're in the same situation as the guy who has 10 roofs over his head.
30 years as a New York taxi driver has put Eugene on the front line in a dangerous city.
I remember one year there was, I think, 13 murders of yellow cab drivers, including a person I knew myself personally. I have a little system I invented to safeguard myself. I had a passenger, a woman, who turned out to be an assistant district attorney in Brooklyn. She said, "The one that you think it is the one that it is." Coming from her, the guy, you know, who looks the part that you have a bad feeling about, that's the guy. Eventually, I came up with this system I call three strikes and you're out. Strike one, I don't like the way you look. Strike two, I also don't like where he's going in the city and the time of day he's going there. There was one time I was back in the 80s, late at night, I was in a section of New York called Queens, one of the boroughs of New York City. Three fellows got in. I picked them up in an area that was not a good area, very late at night, deserted. And I didn't like the feeling of the ride. I didn't like the way they were talking to each other. I found a police car that was actually stopped for, I think, giving another car a ticket or something. And I just pulled up behind that car, and I said, "The ride ends here." And they all filed out immediately without saying a word. That actually proved to me that I was right. They were going to hold me up. I was just lucky that time.
On the flip side, we welcome taxi drivers into some of the most jubilant moments of our lives.
You run the gamut of the human situation or human condition, every emotion, every situation imaginable, just about. At the very top of my favorite ride, it's a young man coming from a hospital who has just gone through the miracle of the birth of his first child. You will never see a happier, more, you know, exuberant human being. That's a very special ride.
Besides, hey, which celebrities have you had in your cab? Another of Eugene's most frequently asked questions is, where were you on 9/11?
I can say that I was there at the World Trade Center on 9/11. I can also say that I was home asleep. But I drove a taxi at 2 o'clock in the morning, which is now 9/11. I took a passenger to the World Trade Center, and then I continued the rest of my shift and went home, woke up around noon, and so I was just starting my day. I was, you know, getting ready to go to work. My daughter comes over and says, "Where are you going?" And I said, "Going to work. What do you mean?" She says, "Turn on the TV." So I actually found out about the disaster much after the rest of the world knew about it. And yet, technically, I was there at the time. That was as early.
If the horror of that day was a lot for New York to take, what followed, as the dust literally settled, were the most challenging of times for a vibrant city cut down in its prime.
The days and weeks and months that followed 9/11 were, of course, extraordinary. It's sort of buried away in a sacred time capsule in my mind, you know. You know, you saw the ruins and the tragedy, and as a taxi driver, it would be every day people getting in and needing to talk about it. And then, you know, the fact of how New Yorkers, you know, conducted themselves during that time, it was inspiring. As a group, how we responded to that with all the emergency vehicles everywhere, military vehicles everywhere, all the diversions you had to take as a taxi driver where you couldn't drive anymore. But it was inspiring. There was sort of a underlying sense of community that you don't normally see in New Yorkers. You know your friends, and you know the people you work with, and then there's everybody else. But this was special, of course. New Yorkers sort of lost their edge, you might say, for quite some time. It took about a year, I would say, for the period of mutual mourning to come to an end, and then New York sort of resumed its usual demeanor. Taxi drivers taken as a whole must have listened to countless stories. And they listened to me, too, I must say. And passengers and drivers kind of acted as each other's therapists during that time.
Ever thought about jumping into a taxi and saying,
"Just drive"?
Apparently it does happen.
A young lady got in my cab, and that's all she said, pretty much. That was it. Just drive. And I drove and drove and drove for about an hour. So I kept asking her, at least at the beginning of the ride, "Well, where do you want to go?" Finally, I realized she didn't care. And then that was like a taxi driver's dream come true. You know, I headed for the highway right away. So she really didn't care. So you make much more money when you're moving rapidly.
On a taxi meter, you're charged a flat rate for getting in, and then on the distance that you travel, not necessarily speed. And then, when you're not moving, you get charged by the clock.
So I get on the highway and I'm driving, and she doesn't say a word. And we went, you know, it went like this for an hour. And finally, I was reaching the end of my tether. Wait a minute, maybe she's going to just jump out. And so I was just about to say, "Look, you know, like, lay the law down." And she said, "Okay, just take me back to where you picked me up." And she paid me the fare, and she gave me a normal tip. As I saw her go down the street, it occurred to me I would be wondering for the rest of my life, what the hell is going on with this woman?
Then, of course, over 30 years, you have those rides that you will simply never forget.
I had a passenger, and you know this passenger. You've spoken of him many times, or occasionally. And you don't know what he looks like, but I had him in my cab one time. And I called him the wrong guy. He jumped in my cab, out of Queens, borough of New York City. Rushed into my taxi on a main street and told me some destination that was about 2 miles away. And the guy was hysterical. He went from the emotions like a yo-yo, from extreme anger to grief, up and down, up and down. And I could barely contain the guy. I could not actually contain the guy at all. And he starts saying, "Oh, I hope I didn't kill him. I hope I didn't kill him. He's all like that." He was, I had to get the story out of him. He had been in a bar, and three guys came into the bar, and one of them thought he'd have some fun by antagonizing the guy. Short man, but strong guy, you could see. And he was just sitting in the bar by himself, minding his own business, when somebody came along and started to needlessly provoke him. And it led to a fight. The bully didn't know that he had once been in the Marines and he knew martial arts. And in this fight, according to the guy in my cab, I'm telling you, he was hysterical. He had given the guy some kind of a chop in the throat, and the guy collapsed on the floor, unable to breathe. And he was afraid that he'd crushed his windpipe and he would just die right there. At that point, he ran out of the bar and got into my taxi. And quite possibly, he just killed someone. I left him with the advice that, "Don't tell anybody else about this except the priest."
Eugene Solomon's book, Confessions of a New York Taxi Driver, is published by HarperCollins and available to buy from bookshops and Amazon.